So far, so good. Thank you, Jay.
It is now 9 o'clock, honorable members. Very welcome to this meeting. This is a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Health of the National Assembly. We are gathered here to receive a briefing by the Minister of Health on the regulation relating to the surveillance and the control of notifiable medical conditions. You have all requested to speak in shipping and wanted to have input on these regulations and the briefing by the Minister. And so this morning we have this opportunity. I also want to welcome the Minister and the Department and all the representatives from the Department this morning to this very important meeting. And also all other people who have joined our meeting, as well as I see the members of the media, some radio stations, some television stations. So honorable members, please reminded to switch on your microphones and also your cameras when you are speaking. Ms. Majalamba, we will now take attendance and apologies. Thank you.
Good morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Mr. Munyai, Dr. Harvard, Ms. Clark, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, Ms. Sengwa, Mr. Van Staden, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. Ms. Sukert will join the meeting later. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will also want to hear who's in attendance from the Ministry and from the Department. Mr. Joe Hutler, PLO, would you be able to inform us?
Yes, good morning, Honorable Chair. I saw the minister on the platform, but I'm not sure if I'm seeing him again. But the DG is on the platform, Honorable Chair. He can address the chair on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I do see the minister on the platform. Honorable Minister, are you here? I'm sorry to what Mr. Hutter was saying, but I do see you there.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member.
Thank you
very
much. Thank you. If Dr. Sandile Buthelezi, the DG, can tell us who is with him today.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My minister and colleagues. We've got a full team from the department led by our minister. And then we then have Dr. Makanya, who's the acting DDG for hospital services and HRD. We've got Dr. Tulare, who's the technical specialist for NHI. We've got Advocate Lufuno Mafoshi, who is our head of legal services in the department. We've got the team from Environmental Health, Mr. Medok Ramatuba and Funeka Bongweni. We've got our acting chief finance officer, Mr. Andre Fenter, with us. We've got our comms team, Mr. Foster Mohale and Mr. Dr. Swale. And then we then have our chief of staff, Dr. Sisiba, and other senior managers that are here. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. And honorable members, let me also thank you for availing yourselves at this time for meeting while we're in constituency period. But before we proceed, I need to remind you that this virtual meeting is deemed to be in the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sitting, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very extremely sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of the screen, which has an option that allows a member to put up their hand to raise points of order. The secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order or interjections. We will go straight on, honourable members, to the presentation which you had received already from Ms. Matsalamba and from the department. I will now invite the minister to please give his opening remarks and to introduce the people who will be doing the presentation to us. Thank you, honourable minister.
Thank you, honourable chair. I hope that my audio is audible. If there's a problem, I might switch off the camera. Maybe I should do that. At least the honourable members have seen that I'm not a ghost. That I'm really here in person. Just to save the bandwidth, I'll switch off the video for a short while. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and greetings to all the Honourable Members, and thank you for giving us this opportunity to present on the health regulations which have been published for public comment relating to management of the notifiable medical conditions. We appreciate this opportunity provided to us by the Honourable Members. On a very demanding day, the day before Good Friday, I know that most people are traveling to be with their family. The good thing is that we are doing this on a virtual platform. So I hope the honorable members are already at their destinations where they will spend the long weekend. Just from my side, honorable chair, just a brief background to where we, how we arrived at where we are. Now, as honorable members will know very well that what is prompting the amendment of the regulations, the health regulations relating to notifiable medical conditions, it's a well-known fact that this is because since the breakout of COVID in March 2020, government looked at ways in which it could provide guidance to the country, to the public, in terms of public health measures, in terms of what was known as to the contributing or the factors which the risk factors, let me say, in terms of the spread of COVID-19. And its severity and affecting the population. And on the basis of that, government adopted the use of the Disaster Management Act. And in terms of this act, over the last 2 years, various regulations have been passed and directives also gazetted by the COCTA, Minister of COCTA as the lead minister in terms of the Disaster Management Act, but also in terms of that, those regulations, various ministers, including the Minister of Health, could then issue the sub-regulations and what is called the directives in terms of the Disaster Management Act. But as the severity of the COVID has been reducing and as many people have been vaccinated, and also believed that also natural immunity in terms of the fact that many people have had the COVID infection over time, over the very many waves up to the fourth wave, which we just went through from November up to very recently in February, March. As the severity has been reducing, the government has found it necessary to then exit the use of the Disaster Management Act, and in that process look at ask various departments to look at other regulations within those departments which can still assist in terms of providing a public health measure to make sure that we don't lose the gains which we have had as a result of public health measures which have been taken to can reduce the risk and severity of the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, in that process, the Department of Health was not logically identified as the department which must lead in this process, because in the large measure, this is a medical condition. The COVID-19 is a medical condition. So in doing so, we went back to the National Health Act and its regulations, as we will see from the presentation. We looked at the regulations which were promulgated in 2017 for control of notifiable medical conditions, the regulations on surveillance and control of notifiable medical conditions. And we used that as a base through which then we could provide alternative public health measures which could help us to manage the remaining threat of the COVID-19. As we know that even though we are now at what the scientists describe in terms of the curve, as we always talked about flattening the curve, where we are with the curve now after the fourth wave is we are at the bottom end or the trough of the curve, with lower infections, lower positivity rate, lower hospital admissions, and lower deaths. But what we also are conscious of from our own experience, and also the experience of looking at what is happening elsewhere in the world, from our own experience, we know that we have gone through this over the last 2 years, that we go on the trough, on the bottom end where this situation exists, where few infections, very low numbers in hospital, but then something else happens, various issues, including the movement of people, the interference of the new variants, and then the next thing, you get into a steep rise in infections again. That's what we've gone through. So at this stage, we have got no basis to believe that that is not going to happen anymore. And
excuse me, Minister, could you try to keep that video on? We're live on all platforms this morning. I'm sorry for this. Thank you.
Well, okay, I hope the bandwidth will survive. So thank you very much for that advice, Chairperson. So the essential issue here is that even though we are at the bottom end of the curve in terms of the where we haven't just exited the fourth wave, we have been here before. First wave from March up to around September 2020, we went onto the bottom around October. But came November, we had some rise in infections, and by December, we're in the second wave. The same thing happened. We exited the second wave right on the bottom. Then around in July of 2020, we again went on to the Delta variant hit us very hard. The second wave was the Beta variant. In July of 2021, were hit by the Delta variant. It went down, and we were able to even go to the local elections with very low infections. A few weeks after the local elections, after we had the elections on the 1st of November, still on a very low rate of infections. As we went into late middle of November and late into November, the Omicron variant was confirmed as the reason why we're starting to have a rise in infections. So we've been here before. So currently, the fourth wave of Omicron has just gone through. We're at the trough, at the bottom end, but we know that this is an experience we have gone through. So until such time that it can be, it can now be confirmed that either maybe the virus has burned out or the immunity in the society is such that there is no further risk. We believe that we still have to have public health measures. But also we can see what is happening in various countries, including countries which have had even more higher rate of vaccination at 70-80%, some even at 90%, but experiencing new rises in infections. So that is why government has then come to the position that we cannot continue using the Disaster Management Act. We need departments to then come with other provisions which we can use. And from the health side, we have looked at the notifiable medical conditions regulations which were already promulgated in 2017. I emphasize this point, honorable members, because in the public out there, there's maybe a misunderstanding, and I suspect even from the feedback we get from some of the honorable members, there is a misconception that these are new, completely new regulations. As you will see from the presentation, there has been some measured amendments in some cases, but in many cases, it's basically an amendment on regulations which actually have been in existence for the last 5 years from 2017. So that's what we will be presenting, and we just want to assure the honorable members and the public that there is no desire from myself as a minister and the team from health to want to continue to control people's lives unnecessarily. This is purely in terms of making sure that we do have instruments through which this threat, which still exists, we are quite conscious of the fact that if we totally just drop everything about containment of the pandemic, we have seen what has happened in our case, but also what is happening even in other parts of the world. So our advice is that it will not be a good direction to simply just drop everything. So as you will see from the presentation, what we have settled on using the amendments, the existing regulations, is really to keep the barest minimum of what we believe is necessary to assist us in terms of currently to keep the infections rate low, to keep this lower end of the graph very low as it is, flattened as it is, and delay any rise in new infections so that we don't burden our health facilities and our health workers who are already very stressed and really have had quite a lot of stress as a result of the previous waves. So and the idea also, just to emphasize that the suspicion that in terms of these new regulations, this can go on forever and ever, we want to dispel that myth as well, that this is to manage these regulations can be amended as the situation changes. So the fear that in terms of this regulation, some of the measures looks like can go on forever. We want to dispel that myth also, that that is definitely not the case. So with that, Honorable Chair, so that we can go into the substance of the matter, I'm going to invite the Director General, Dr. Buthelezi, and the team with your permission to go into the presentation of the substance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister, and greeting once more to the honorable members. As the Minister has given an introduction, the sets of regulations that we are amending, in addition to the notified medical conditions, there are three other sets of regulations, which one relates to environmental health, the other one relates to the management of mortal remains, and the other one relates to the points of entry, which are the ports into the country. Our presentation will be led by Advocate Mahoshi, who is the head of our legal services, and then he will deal mainly with the notifiable medical conditions, and then we'll, the other three, which are related to environmental health, ports of entry, and human remains, will then be led by Mr. Medok Ramutuba. I will then, with the indulgence of the chair and members, invite Advocate Mahoshi to lead in the presentation. Thank you very much.
Uh, Thank you, honorable members, minister, DG, and colleagues. The presentation will deal with all four sets of regulations which the department is trying to come up with to deal with COVID pandemic. So I will deal mostly with the notifiable medical conditions. Janice, can go to the second slide. By way of background, it is critical to note that in terms of Section 3, Subsection 1, Paragraph A of the National Health Act, the minister has to make sure that within the available resources, he must endeavor to protect, promote, improve, and maintain the health of the population. So that is the mandate that the Minister of Health has. In line of that, Section 90, Subsection 1, Paragraph K, empowered the minister after consultation with the National Health Council to make regulations. And these regulations include the regulations regarding notifiable medical conditions. On 15 December 2017, the minister promulgated the regulations relating to surveillance and control of notifiable medical conditions. However, the 2017 regulations were not geared for pandemic, but it was meant for individual cases, and mostly those cases were confined in the health establishment setting. So the national health, the notifiable medical conditions were specific for that. When COVID-19 was declared a pandemic, various legal and legislative instruments were considered to control and contain the spread of COVID-19. And the Disaster Management Act was the most viable legislative instrument, as the 2017 regulations were not geared for pandemic. So in terms of the disasters regulations, Regulation 6, which dealt with the refusal for medical examination, prophylaxis, treatment, isolation, and quarantine, and Regulation 7, dealing with isolation or quarantine of person in terms of the disaster management regulations, were based on Regulation 15 and 16 of the 2017 regulations. So we thought it is critical to indicate that these the disasters regulation were based on the notifiable medical conditions which were promulgated in 2017. Due to the fact that the disaster management is meant to be a temporary tool to assist the state to deal with disaster, the National Department of Health had to embark on a process of amending the health regulations in terms of the National Health Act of 2003 and the International Health Regulations Act of 1974. This is to address the COVID-19 and other notifiable medical conditions outside the national state of disaster. In light of the above, the following are the set of regulations that are being drafted or amended. Firstly, the regulations relating to surveillance and control of notifiable medical conditions. Secondly, the regulations relating to public health measures in points of entry. And then the regulations relating to the management of human remains and regulations relating to environmental health. Just to indicate to honorable members, as we have been indicating that the surveillance regulations is not a new regulation, but however is an amendment of the regulations. And we have done a table that at least show the regulations of 2017 and the proposed draft regulations for 2022. In terms of the 2017 regulation, we had Regulation 16 that provided for mandatory medical examination, prophylaxis, treatment, isolation, and quarantine. And it is critical maybe just to indicate that this part of the regulations, Regulation 15.1-6, have not been amended and therefore is still applicable. The amendments that have been done to this section have been done by way of addition, and the addition is from Regulation 15A to 15H. The Regulation 15.1 of the existing regulation provides or require for medical examination, prophylaxis, and treatment, but that has to be determined on a case-by-case basis and has to be tailored depending the public health risk and individual circumstances of the person. However, what we have done, as we have indicated, to say that the 2017 regulations were not geared to deal with the pandemic, we have then added 15A. That then deal with the refusal for medical examination, treatment, prophylaxis, and isolation and quarantine. These regulations provide that a person who is a confirmed clinical or laboratory confirmed case for a notifiable medical condition or is suspected of having contracted a notifiable medical condition or has been in contact with a carrier may not refuse medical examination, including but not limited to the taking of bodily samples, which may be authorized by any law, or be admitted in a health establishment, quarantine, or isolation site. What is critical is that there has to be authorization by law. So this should not be an arbitrary position. That is why it is clear that the regulation provides that there has to be authorization in terms of the law. And this is aimed at preventing the transmission of notifiable medical condition. And in terms of the 2017 regulation, sub-regulation 2 authorizes the head of the provincial department to apply to a high court for an appropriate court order. If a person who is a clinical or laboratory confirmed case or carrier of the notifiable medical condition refuses to consent to medical examination, including the taking of biological specimen, or refuse to be admitted at a health establishment, or for a mandatory prophylaxis treatment, isolation, or quarantine. As we have indicated, this was meant for an individual and a case-by-case basis, and it was not meant for the pandemic. We have then introduced in the 2022 draft regulations the provisions that deal with isolation and quarantine of persons and to provide more information as to how should isolation and quarantine be done. These regulations provide for isolation or quarantine. It also provides for both self-quarantine and self-isolation for those who meet the criteria set up in regulation 15G. And this was meant to, and with our experience that there were people who felt that they are able to self-quarantine and to self-isolate, and therefore a criteria was necessary for self-isolation. These include that the facility must at least be separate with well-ventilated bedroom with a bathroom and a toilet, and that they should not be shared with any persons who are not subject to quarantine. And therefore, the meals provided in the facility must be served on a room using disposable utensils that are kept separate because as a control measure. And then the facility must have a thermometer that will allow for a person to measure his temperature on a daily basis. Because this person is not monitored by health professionals, therefore it is critical that at least these measures are there, so that if there are other issues or the temperatures rise dramatically, then at least they can then make a call so that at least they can be taken care of. The criteria for self-quarantine or self-isolation was not in the 2017 regulation, as the quarantine and isolation was done at a health facility. So that's critical to also take note. If a person refuses to quarantine himself or herself or to travel to a site of isolation or quarantine as directed, a court order must be obtained to compel such person to quarantine or isolate. And this is just to indicate that instead of having the head of a provincial department to apply to a health court, will still want to have a court order so that at least the person, if they have to be forced to go for a mandatory isolation or quarantine, at least there is a due process in terms of the court processes. Next slide. The regulations also provide for isolation of symptomatic person and asymptomatic persons. Both symptomatic and asymptomatic persons can self-isolate if they meet the criteria. However, if they do not meet the criteria for self-isolation, they may be isolated in a designated facility, and the requirement for a court order is still provided for. In this case, it is no longer through the court application that the HOD has to do, as we have indicated that situation was meant to deal with very separate, limited cases and not geared for pandemic. The 2017 regulation sub 4 provides that a head of provincial department must apply for high court for an order to conduct autopsy. This regulation, as we have indicated, is still remain as it is, as it has not been amended. Next slide. Regulation 15F of the new regulations go on to provide for the designation of quarantine facilities. Above, we have been talking about the quarantine, but now there has to be a designation of quarantine facilities. And this has to happen if and when it is required for the purpose of containing and preventing the spread of notifiable medical conditions. And the designated quarantine facility and isolation guidelines, so they have to meet to the criteria that has been issued by the Department of Health. And then Regulation 6, which is still applicable, the head of a provincial department is required to revise the decision to apply for a court order when the conditions of a mandatory action changes. So in other words, if there is no longer a need for a person to be quarantined or isolated, the head of the provincial department will have to go to court to change those orders. And therefore, that regulation is still there. The new addition in terms of the 2022 draft regulations was the issues of contract tracing, which was made as a result of a control measure. So we have also put this. This is a completely new regulations in terms of that. But the purpose of that is to address and prevent the and combating the spread of COVID-19 medical conditions. There is also a designated judge who is supposed to then safeguard the interest of those people whose information will have been put in the government database, so that there is no abuse of the information that is there, as a mechanism to build in the designated judge. Then Regulation 16 provides for the control of spread of notifiable medical conditions. Again, Regulation 16, 1 to 5 have not been amended and still applicable. And then the amendments that we've done to this section is again by way of addition of Regulation 16A to 16M. The regulation 16A just provides for the general measures to contain the spread of medical conditions that can spread through droplets. These measures include the wearing of a mask when in a gathering in an indoor public space or using any form of a public transport or entering into a public premises, and also provide for social distancing. I'm not going to, because maybe not deal much with the provisions on the control of spread of notifiable medical conditions in terms of the 2017 regulation, because those provisions have not been amended. We can then go on to the next slide where we have got 16B. You can go to another 16B. 16B then provides for the control measures that will happen when a person exits the Republic. And these include the requirements for a full vaccination certificate. And in the event where such person does not have a full vaccination certificate, a negative PCR test result of not more than 72 hours will therefore be required. But it is also critical that all persons that exist in the Republic must ensure that they comply with the requirements of the country of their destination. As a measure of controlling the spread of notifiable medical condition, persons found to have contracted notifiable medical condition may be pursuant to a testing be placed under mandatory isolation. And if they are able to self-isolate, they will then have to be allowed to do so. Regulation 16C provides for the requirements for person entering the Republic, and those also include the full vaccination certificate, the negative PCR test of not more than 72 hours. However, the person who entered the Republic through the points of entry must be subjected to screening at the port of entry and may be placed under mandatory quarantine for a period stipulated in the guidelines. If they are found to have the notifiable medical condition. Next slide. 16D then deals with the aircraft crew on international travel. And it provides for the containment measures that must be adhered to with regard to this crew member who may be empowered or allowed to disembark. And those include the screening and, if necessary, subject to medical examination, which may include testing and quarantine. Those requirements also are applicable to the crew vessel. And with regard to the local air travel, the regulations provide for screening before departure as a containment measures for all persons undertaking local travel. And those who are found to have elevated temperature or symptoms consistent with the notifiable medical conditions may be subjected to a medical examination, which may include testing, and may not be allowed to board if they are found to be positive. Then 16G then deals with issues of cross-border freight operators. They may also be subjected to medical examination that include testing and quarantine if the situation warrants that. 16H then provides for the control measures when in public place, and these include public hygiene measures such as cleaning and disinfection of public places, hand sanitization, and practice of physical distancing. 16I then provides for attendance of funerals. These include the issues of limitation of attendance of funerals to 100 persons. The further, the wearing of masks must be adhered to, and all health protocols must be adhered to. Social distance measures must be practiced, and there's also the restriction of night vigils and after funeral gatherings. 16J then deal with the gatherings and the requirements, the containment measures that are must be adhered to when attending gatherings. These include the wearing of face masks, adhering to all health protocols and maintenance of physical distancing of 1 meter. And then indoor and outdoor gatherings may be up to 50% of the venue capacity, provided that there is a production of a valid vaccine certificate with social distancing of at least 1 meter complied with, and compulsory mask wearing for indoor gatherings is a requirement. However, the attendance of a gathering without a proof of vaccination shall be limited to 1,000 indoors and 2,000 outdoors. And then Regulation 16K provides for the control visits of members of public. This is the control of members to the health establishments and facilities, except for those that might be going for treatment of medication. And they will have to be subjected to strict adherence to health protocols. 16L provides for the compliance officers. And in this regard, they are to ensure that there are strict adherence to the standards of hygiene and health protocols relating to notifiable medical conditions, and to develop a plan for containment measures to ensure that the workplace meets standards of the health protocols relating to notifiable medical conditions. 16M then provides for sharing of advice. So in this regard, in order to contain the spread of notifiable medical conditions, there will have to be the sharing of advice among our relevant cabinet members to enable such relevant cabinet members to come up with regulatory measures to contain the spread of notifiable medical conditions within their own legislative framework. The health regulations will not be able to deal with everything that the disaster management regulations have been dealing with. And therefore, that is why it is so critical that there has to be the sharing of advice with the relevant cabinet members, so that they are able to take their own legislative, the regulatory measures in terms of their own legislative framework. The last presentation on the notifiable medical conditions then deal with representation, which is Regulation 17. In terms of the 2017 regulation, a person who is a clinical or laboratory confirmed cases and who refuses to voluntary consent to a medical condition examination by a qualified healthcare provider, or to be admitted at a health establishment or for mandatory prophylaxis treatment, isolation or quarantine in order to prevent transmission, is entitled to legal representation. So that is still there. However, the only addition or the amendment in terms of the 22 draft regulations is amendment of Regulation 17 by adding sub-regulation 4. This regulation provides for a warrant issued by a competent court to compel those who refuse to voluntary consent to medical examination by a qualified healthcare provider, including the taking of biological specimen to be admitted a health establishment of mandatory prophylaxis or treatment, isolation or quarantine. The sub-regulations dealing with the legal representation have not been amended. As such, they are still applicable. So what we have added is only that. So these are the other provisions for Regulation 17 that are still in place, have not been amended. Next slide. So that concludes the presentation on the notifiable medical conditions, and to try and indicate the differences between the 2017 regulations and the proposed draft regulations to deal with COVID and other notifiable medical conditions. Thanks, honorable members, DG, Minister. Back to DG.
Thank you very much, Advocate Makoshi. With the indulgence, just before we come into this one, by on environmental health, I think subsequent to the, we have presented what was gazetted by the department. Subsequent to that, there's been a lot of discussions, and as the honourable members will note that when the state of disaster was lifted by the president, the Minister of Culture then gazetted regulations in terms of Section 27 2M of the Disaster Management Act, which is what we call post-disaster rehabilitation, the transitional arrangement.
Sorry, DG, please switch on your camera. Thank you.
Oh, my apologies, Chair. I was saying, subsequent to the gazetting of these regulations, the honourable members will note that there were then regulations that were transitional regulations that were gazetted by the Minister of COCTA in terms of Section 27 2M of the Disaster Management Act, which is what we call post-disaster rehabilitation, which then are a transitional measure to ensure that there is some there is no lacuna in place. And in terms of those regulations, some of what we've gazetted has been revised. One of them is the funerals. There is no more, the funerals are now treated like the other gatherings, not limited to 100. So that changed with those regulations. But because we've gazetted before that, we are presenting exactly how we gazetted. And then also the issue of wearing of masks outside was dropped. So there is no need to be wearing masks outside except for indoors. And also for people exiting the Republic, there's been a relaxation in terms of the requirements. So I must mention that so that the honourable members will understand that there's a difference there and that there were some changes and amendments that were done post the gazetting of these regulations. I will now request Mr. Medok Ramotuba to take us through the last part of the presentation. I don't know if my minister wanted to add something. I see he's on. Thank you.
The only thing I wanted to request is that the next must be as brief as possible. We need more time for a discussion with the honourable members. So if the ones on environment and other and management of human remains, if they could please be very brief, just the highlights of what they cover, so that there's more time for discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister, for that intervention. Yes, we really need to move faster. I counted the number of slides to the left. I think they are about 18. But I see the Honourable Van Staden has raised his hand on the platform. Honourable Van Staden.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to support the Minister in his request. I think we are, it's already 9:45, and I think there's lots of discussions that needs to take place. So I'll support the Minister in his request. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Please continue, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Medok, please move on and move quick. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good day, Minister and honourable members. I will try to be brief. With the regulations that relate to environmental health, we've got the I think the initial aspect to refer to here is that the promulgation of these regulations, Minister has powers in terms of Section 90, Subsection 1, A, N, and W. And also maybe to indicate, Chairperson, that the proposed regulations that relate to environmental health are new because there was a gap that was created in 2012 when President made a proclamation that on the Health Act. During that period, all the regulations that were promulgated under the Health Act of 1977 were considered to be null, or they were nullified at the time. And we identified during daily operations by environmental health that this was a challenge. The next slide, in the next slide, if we look at it. We've got the human remains regulations that put an amendment due to, of course, the identified need and the gap that was created by that proclamation. And we realized that there was a lack of legal instruments that could be used to assist the country in managing this aspect. The three sets of regulations fall within the scope of environmental health profession, which is defined in terms of Regulation 698 under the Health Professions Act of 1974. Environmental services have been regulated under various public health acts previously, from the 1919 Public Health Act, the 1977 Health Act, as well as the current 2003 legislation as amended. Then we've got various regulations in all those acts that actually were regulating environmental health matters ever since. And they are listed there for the sake of time. I will not go through, but basically it's on general health regulations, the offensive trade, as well as issues of sanitary regulations and management of human remains. When we look at the International Health Regulations 2005, which is the basis for the development or promulgation of the regulations that is managing port health issues, it is a WHO guide that is not yet legislated into South African law. However, in the process of coming up with these drafts that are published for public comments, there was consultation process that went through with the relevant key stakeholders and technical people that have interest in these areas. The proposed regulations on environmental health in the Government Gazette 46048, in terms of the management of human remains, which is Regulation 363, when the proclamation of 2012 came about and then we had that gap, Minister deemed it fit to urgently promulgate a regulation in 2013 May without consultation as a matter of urgency to close the gap that was there at the time, because there were a lot of mushrooming of funeral undertakers' premises because there was no law at the time that was governing those areas. And various challenges were experienced during implementation, and both from the public as well as the industry itself. And then certain gaps were identified and some lessons were learned through which necessitated the revision of the regulations. And it was justifiable because, remember, when Minister proclaimed in 2013, there were no consultations, so we deemed it fit that industry and the public should be involved in that. And then the proposed amendment seeks to address the challenges that were raised by operators. Amongst other things that we saw when we were dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic were the issues of transportation of these human remains, which were not well regulated in these regulations. We've got a special section, that is Chapter 5, that is putting emphasis on managing human remains during events of international or national concern like the COVID-19, which will be only effective when we've got those kind of events. And then we also brought in the issues of clarifying the issues of declaration and certification of death, because there were a little bit of gap in terms of managing that, as well as the clarification on the exhumation of human remains and giving the DG the powers to make directions when there are such events of international or national concern without having to go through a disaster. The regulations that talks to environmental health, on the other hand, as we have made reference to their origins from the 1977 and 1919 legislation, this regulation is meant to deal with the environmental health inspections, investigations, abatement of health nuisance, and the procedure to abate health nuisance and the seizure of items which are likely to cause harm or ill health to our people. This regulation brings in the national environmental health norms and standards, which the DG gazetted in 2015. But because they are not enforceable, we brought in some key elements that need to be enforced into this regulation so that we can be able to enforce accordingly. Then the regulation also deals with the environmental pollution control and sanitation systems approval, as well as the issues of management of waste in general. The next slide looks at, as we continue, it also deals with prevention of dumping, removal of waste and noise and water pollution, which is one of the things that these and other portfolio committees before had issues with the dumping all over our townships or the outskirts of our communities. Deals with control of venom and vectors, overcrowding in premises, requirements premises during derived from existing norms and standards as well, deals with maintenance and operation of sewage works, municipal connections, as well as related matters, and lastly deals with the requirements for saving notices and exemptions and offences that relate to any such non-compliances. The Port Health Regulations that deals with public health measures in the points of entry have been developed under the International Health Regulations of 1974, which was proclaimed in compliance with the 1969 World Health Organization International Health Regulations. The regulations will be repealing the supplementary regulations that was promulgated under the 1974 Act and lastly amended in 2003, because that regulation was too specific and difficult to use in times like now when we're responding to COVID-19 or any other outbreaks, because it only focused on the four diseases, which is cholera, yellow fever, plague and smallpox. So we are in a time where you need to open up so that we can deal with also other diseases. In their current state, they are no longer relevant or ideal to deal with other infectious diseases, Chairperson. The issues, again, in terms of these regulations is the globalization, which has resulted in the emergence and re-emergence of infectious diseases and given rise to other public health risks, such as Ebola, the MERS-CoV-2, Zika virus, as well as SARS, H1N1, as we have dealt them in the past, in the previous years. The International Health Regulations 2005 has placed measures for prevention, early detection, response, and broad public health risk that may arise as a result of international travel and trade. Hence the need for us to update our regulations to align to them. Supplementary regulations have to be amended to allow for the department to have measures in place to respond to wide range of public health risks and also to bring into effect provisions of the International Health Regulations 2005 related to points of entry. The last slide is talking to the fact that this IHR 2005 has not been enacted as we did with the 1969 one. This one has not yet been enacted into South African law, and its measures remains unenforceable because it's just an international guide, which is has not been passed as a law in the country due to its non-domestication into South African law. These regulations are revised from 1969 version to address nature of emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases and opening up to deal with other measures, any other measures of international concern. And lastly, domestication of this IHR and promulgation of the regulations relating to public health measures in points of entry remains vital for countries that are preventive and to respond to any other measures of that nature. And in conclusion, Chairperson, it is recommended that the portfolio committee take note of the fact that the regulations have been published in line with Section 3 as well, 1 and A of the National Health Act, as well as the 91K of the same Act. Termination of national state of disaster has created a gap that is as a result of the absence of regulations to manage future pandemics and other communicable diseases, which these amendments that we are working on are closing that gap perfectly well. Department has to embark on the process of amending these health regulations in terms of the Act and the Health Act, as well as the International Health Regulations, in order to address conditions outside the national state of disaster. And lastly, public participatory process is currently underway to receive comments on the published regulations we've got over 150,000 comments that we have received ever since Minister published these regulations for comments. And thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Madoc. Just to add then, before I give back to my minister, the minister has authorized us to extend the period for extra 7 days, and that will be in the Gazette this morning. And we've now, in addition to the email, people can actually use the WhatsApp number that will be gazetted this morning to actually comment on the matter. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll hand over to my minister. Thank you.
Chair, just 1 minute, just to say that, just to add on what the DG said earlier on, that over time, as we have also been discussing the post-disaster transition, as he has mentioned, this has been tailored down to very few public health measures. What we are also considering as we receive the comments, just to indicate that even last night we had a interaction with the South African Council of Churches in a meeting which was coordinated by, which was chaired by the president. So they also, just to give you an indication of various stakeholders who are making inputs. As even before we come to the conclusion, as DG indicated, we are extending to the 24th of April to allow also on WhatsApp further comments. We are also considering, as advice keeps coming, that we may need to separate the broader public health measures of surveillance of notifiable medical conditions from the specific measures which are now, for instance, implemented under the post-disaster recovery, so that we remain with a very small focus on the post-COVID, the COVID post-disaster management, away from, separate that from the broader intervention on notifiable medical conditions broadly. So those are the considerations, and we await comments from the honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. The DG and his team, I see there's a question from Honourable Dr. Susan Stemacquario, can we have the WhatsApp number? But thank you very much also for the extension which you deem necessary to have. It's been raised by quite a number of people and by the members that we needed to have other forms of people being able to give their input on these regulations. So that is great. And, you know, looking widely at what was presented here today, I can see that you've applied your mind very broadly at what was still outstanding in terms of the National Health Act. And of course, we've now learned that we need to have certain regulations in place, as we've just experienced with COVID and the importance thereof. So from my side, I want to thank you for having brought these regulations and having actually put these together and having allowed the public to give a comment on those regulations. I'm not going to take a lot of time. I just want to move quickly to give the names of the members who want to raise some questions with you. Honourable members, I might just lose my connection for a little while because we will be having load shedding in the area where I am. But I'm going to mention very quickly, Van Staden, Clark, Tembekwayo, Sengwa, Ismail, Gela, Zuela, Harvard, Sukers, Munyai, Wilson, Chirwa. Van Staden, Clark, Tembekwayo, Sengwa, Ismail, Gela, Zuela, Harvard, Sukers, Munyai, Wilson, Chirwa, in that order, please. I see there's a hand raised by Honourable Shaky Mom. I think he would also probably want to ask questions. I'll take his hand just now. If you can please also be reminded that we had decided we were only going to use 2 hours for this program this morning. We already have used up 1 hour, so honourable members, very to the point with your questions, and then we will still be expecting responses by the minister and the department. I see you've dropped your hand, honourable Shaky Mom. I've added you at the end of that list. Please continue, honourable members.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I only have 6 questions this morning, so I hope you have some indulgence with me. Now, Honourable Minister, thank you for seeing us this morning. It's with a great pleasure to have you here with us, and I think thank you for responding to our request to see you this morning. I want to start, first of all, and I think we must be very clear with each other, and I think I'm going to be very straightforward with you this morning. I think we must stop sugarcoating these regulations at this moment. I think there's a big public outcry out there from South Africans against these regulations, and the people cannot understand why the government is still clinging to these type of regulations and restrictive regulations, which have already caused so much damage to this country. I mean, the low occupancy of hospital beds and recovery rate of 97% suggests that any further regulations will only harm South Africa any further. As you have said this morning, the published regulations of 15 March are nothing in my eyes, and I think of most of the public's eyes, nothing but a copy and paste of a level 5 regulations that was published under the Disaster Management Act on the 24th of March 2020, and the regulations under the Department of Health in 17 July 2020. So it's not only the 15 December regulations of 2017, but it's looking more or less the same. But these regulations I've mentioned now is also the same. In the matter of notifiable medical conditions and the classifications thereof, and as you have, the department I have now said, it was already gazetted in December 2017 on pages 22, 23, and 24. My question to those matter, however, is the following, and I see that COVID-19 is not listed there as a notifiable medical condition. My question on that is, how will the COVID-19 matter be addressed if it is not listed there, and how can you, as the minister, then publish these new health regulations if COVID-19 is not even listed in the regulations and the annexure and tables as a notifiable medical condition? If you can just explain to me the matter regarding that. This past week, Honourable Minister, there was various reports in the media, and I am receiving a lot of complaints of people and stakeholders who are submitting their comments to the department, and the email is coming back to them that said that the message was deleted without being read. And I can WhatsApp you if I'm finished here the screenshots which was being sent to me. If this is indeed the case, then Honourable Minister, you must take note that this sort of action by this department is nothing more than a horrible violation of a public and stakeholders' constitutional right to comment on the so far-reaching regulations, and it places then a big question mark on the whole process regarding public participation and comments. I think it is the view of the Freedom Front Plus and other stakeholders at outside that the minister should note that although the minister is empowered in terms of Section 91K of the National Health Act of 2003 to publish regulations without consulting the public, but once the minister opens the process for public participation and comments, the minister and the department is then committed to this process, and that the public participation framework must be complied with. As I said earlier, there's a big public outcry against these regulations, and therefore I and the Freedom Front Plus urge the minister not to extend only the comments with more than a week, but also to withdraw the public health regulations of 15 March and not to promulgate it into law. The minister also said on the 6th of April, you stated in the media that the target for vaccinations was initially to reach 70% of the population. And we all know the reasons why it did not happen in the first place, and our targets were shifted time and again. And I'm not going to elaborate on that matter again. We have debated many times about the vaccination procurement and distribution of that. And please don't label me as an anti-vaxxer, because I have received all my vaccinations and I can give you my certificate, and my chairperson can also vouch for me on that. But I stated to you, Minister, in this committee in August last year and in December last year that compulsory vaccinations against COVID-19 cannot be allowed, as it is every person's free will and choice to take the vaccine or not, and that cannot become mandatory. And I have referred many times to sections 12 and 27 of the Constitution. And I have referred many times to the President's speech of the 1st of February 2021, where he said that nobody will be forced to take the vaccine. My question, however, is, on these regulations is that with all these debates and assurances that have taken place and that have been said by you and the president, for what reason then is it published in the regulations of 15 March 2022 that before entering a shop or a place of worship or gatherings or sporting events or even entering the pub or the republic, people must show a vaccination certificate or a negative COVID test that is not older than 72 hours. Is this then not mandatory compulsory vaccination? Is this not the reason why you are trying to hide government's failures to start with negotiations for the procurement of vaccinations in 2019 and implementing the vaccination program in good time? Should you not rather make attempts to persuade the public that to getting vaccinated is the best way to combat the pandemic rather than by promulgating these regulations and use it as a way to punish the country's citizens? Minister, I think we must be very clear with each other this morning. I think the replacing of a state of disaster with these new regulations is no more than a transfer of political power from the one minister to the other. And it is clear that the proposed regulations are not well thought out and that government has apparently learned no lessons from the previous restrictions in terms of a state of disaster. A similar process of health regulations that is currently underway and what we are discussing at this moment was also brought in front of this committee in October 2019 by Minister McKenzie, more or less the same, and we have rejected it. I want to know if any of these regulations that is currently in front of us, first of all, is it in line with science and thus goal-orientated? And secondly, is it not so that any restriction or measure that has no apparent scientific basis is senseless and comes to an abuse of power? And lastly, Honourable Chairperson, when I read Section 15, where the designation of quarantine facilities is required, by the National Department of Health, the Provincial Health Departments, the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and municipalities must allocate and designate these facilities. My question is, have we not learned out of the chaos that was happening during 2020 with places like Zita Beseni in Mpumalanga, the Coastlands Hotel in Durban, and many other places in South Africa that were shut down due to the facilities that was inadequate? Don't we now have the opportunity to correct the mistakes of the past 2 years and to ensure that South Africans benefit from the lessons learned from the COVID-19 constraints? I heard that in the media there was 185,000 submissions made so far in accordance with visa regulations to the minister's office. I want to know what is the number of submissions what was received by this morning on these regulations. And I want to know from the minister, and he must tell me this morning, how seriously is he taking these submissions and these objections? And once again, the Freedom Front Plus urges the minister to withdraw the published health regulations of 15 March and not to promulgate it into law. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Members, please be mindful of the time. Honourable Van Staden has taken quite a number of minutes, but try and be as quickly as you possibly can. Next one is Honourable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Minister for availing himself this morning, because I think these are very important discussions, and if it takes over the time period, then Chairperson, then it will have to just be like that, because we have to have serious in-depth discussions around these regulations. I must agree with Member Van Staden. It seems like these regulations have just been copied and pasted, you know, from the Disaster Management Act into the health regulations. And there's a massive concern in terms of the public out there that these regulations infringes on people's rights, on their constitutional rights, their freedom, and their liberties. And it's something that we really need to take cognizance of. The following questions I would like to ask is, what scientific evidence has the regulations been based on? In terms of Professor Mardy at the Wits Vaccinology Center, 73% of people in this country already have some kind of herd immunity in South Africa. why have all NMC been clustered under the same regulation? This is not reasonable at all. For example, hepatitis or lead poisoning should not feature under the same conditions as COVID. Do these regulations align with the WHO and their view in terms of NMC? What are the reasons that government has decided that the disaster management regulations should be transferred to the health regulations? Does the minister have the powers to place this country under lockdown without consulting with scientists and medical specialists? What are the reasons government has changed its position in terms of COVID? Recently, the regulations were changed to say if you tested positive and had no symptoms, you wouldn't have to quarantine. In terms of these regulations, this has changed yet again, and you will be forced into mandatory isolation. You'll be forced into submitting yourself to medical examinations, tests, and treatment. In terms of prophylaxis treatment for COVID, this treatment is only via vaccination based on these regulations. Is it my understanding that government will enforce South Africans to have mandatory vaccines? Is this correct? Was the input of scientists and medical specialists taken into account when these regulations were drafted and published? Currently, scientists are sharing contrasting views to the regulations, with many saying that we do not have to wear masks indoors anymore as long as we have good ventilation. The quarantine requirements in the regulations are unrealistic for many South Africans. How can this be adequately implemented, considering that many will not be able to meet such quarantine requirements? When traveling internationally and returning back to South Africa, you would either need to have a vaccination certificate or subject yourself to a 72-hour PCR test upon entry. Are we 100% sure that these PCR tests are effective, and are they really necessary? When entering the country, you'll have to write to the Department of Health to inform them within 72 hours that you have tested positive and that you have to send your details of your isolation site. How will this be managed considering that government does not even have the capacity to do this? I mean, you try and phone any government department, they don't even answer their phones. Why has South Africa not taken the lead from other countries that have completely abolished regulations and taken the view that we must live with the virus? What makes South Africa different? Why has government not looked at alternative based on scientific evidence at the time and experts in the field as to appropriate steps to be taken into short term to combat NMC through proper lawful challenges, taking into account transparency, accountability, and rationality? What plans have government got in place to ramp up its vaccination drive to reduce the threat of COVID, as that is purely what these regulations have been drafted for? There are no other notifiable medical conditions that we are struggling with to control in this country. So why bring these additional regulations? I also just would like to thank the department. We welcome the extension for the next 7 days as well as the WhatsApp number that's going to be provided. However, considering reports that emails were sent to me and these emails were deleted before they were read, will an audit be conducted? We fear that submissions would have been lost. Does the minister know the cause of this? Is it a technical issue or is it a human error? I wrote to the minister around this matter.
Let me just say this finish to all members. We have 14 members who want to raise questions. If we're all going to take 5 minutes to 10 minutes, we will not finish today.
Okay, Chairperson, I'm wrapping up. The minister's office had asked me to send him some examples of these, which I've done this morning. So thank you, Minister, for responding promptly, and I have sent you the examples. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just like to say, as the minister started, he said they are not here to control people's lives.
Are we losing you, Honourable Tim McGuire? Honourable Dr. Tim McGuire? I think I will go on to Honourable Slengo and come back to you. Honourable Slengo? Honourable Slengo, are you there? Honourable Isma?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for the presentation, Minister, and your team. I just want to highlight one thing, Chair, without being disrespectful or sounding disrespectful, but this is a very, very important health amendment. And I mean, I think it's very important for all of us to have, you know, a time to be actually dealing with this matter because it's affecting, you know, our citizens' lives. So I'll just start quickly. Does the requirement of 30 days comply with the law? Should it not be 90 days for comment? My first question. My second question, there are inputs from and comments from people that have been deleted without being read, and I just want to highlight that this has been brought to everyone's attention, including myself, and it's quite frustrating, you know, when the department doesn't respond or doesn't read the emails, and then we are actually inundated with 1,000 emails a day because, you know, they don't know who else to, you know, correspond with because they're not receiving any responses from the department. So, Chair, that is crucial because if this thing goes to court, you know, it really is not going to be complying with the requirement as necessary, because due processes were not, you know, followed because of the deletion of emails. Three is, again, on what scientific basis or evidence, you know, qualifies this amendment since most countries have already lifted regulations entirely as new variants of COVID-19 seem to be less infectious. Thus, you know, we can actually, many people have actually raised the issue to say that many of these amendments are actually inconsistent and illogical, you know, in the draft amendments. Now, you know, when we're talking about masks, there are various studies that show that, you know, masks actually don't work. And I'm just going to use one example of Professor Mehdi. He said it clearly on radio and newspaper articles stating that, you know, the reality is that most people that are wearing masks are effectively wearing these masks incorrectly. So actually, and there's no real evidence of, you know, where these masks are actually working or effective in you know, not spreading the virus, I should say, or the, you know, COVID-19. So the reality is that we need to be, you know, we need to be effectual and we need to be doing something that's going to be constructive as a country, not just wearing masks for the sake of wearing masks. We have many people that actually feel stifled, and those with comorbidities actually feel more of a health risk wearing these masks rather than not. My third point is that on 22nd of March, six top medical researchers slammed the draft regulations, and these were, you know, Professor Mendelssohn, Professor Shabir Mehdi, Jeremy Nell, Glenda Gray from SAMRC, Regina Ossi from Infectious Disease Specialist, Francois Ventel, a professor of medicine. So if our reality is that if our, you know, professionals are actually telling us, our medical researchers are telling us that these are actually ineffective, you know, these draft regulations are actually ineffective, why are we actually going, you know, allowing for this? I'm quickly going to be commenting on a few other matters that have been brought to my attention that I've been requested to highlight as a member of parliament. You know, these amendments, if passed, will directly infringe religious rights in the following way. Places of worship may be forced to close again in any event of perceived outbreak of the virus. And now, you know, for certain religious, compartments, I should say, or religious rites, is that prayers need to be taking place in congregation. And the number of people performing prayers in congregation will permanently be restricted once these amendments are actually passed. You know, face masks and social distancing will become permanent if there is another outbreak. And this will affect, you know, the religious regulations method of prayers. Now, reality is that any person who sneezes or coughs in a place of worship and is suspected of being infected can potentially be reported as a risk and referred to for testing and forced treatment. Now, you know, some of these regulations are highly, you know, I mean, I can be sneezing now because I suffer from hay fever, or there may be dust in my air. And I mean, this actually gives the right to, this amendment actually gives the right to the department to say, okay, you know what, come and do a test or come and, you know, now you must quarantine. And I mean, I think it's just going a bit too far. When it comes to, you know, washing and shrouding the deceased bodies, you know, this has been highly, you know, affected during the time of COVID and when it was level one, level two restrictions. And, you know, basically religious organizations are worried that this may be disrupted again at the discretion of the state. And, you know, this leaves a painful memory for those who have lost loved ones and those that were deprived of affording them the last rites according to their religious regulation. And this is, you know, actually very, very restrictive and it's actually very biased and inhumane to some when they don't have, you know, a sense of closure. Another important factor is the government will have the authority to enforce any medication or vaccine, whether it's really certified, you know, halal or haram or harmful or beneficial. And then no one will be held accountable for any harmful consequences. And this is very, very important, especially for certain religions. The fact that, you know, the South African Human Rights Commission has deemed it unconstitutional that companies want to make it mandatory for all staff to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Now, you know, this is actually stated by the SAHRC chairperson, Advocate Bongani Majola, says that this move is a violation of employees' rights. The reality is that, you know, I mean, when the department or when government has now thought of these regulations, have you really thought of the consequences of this? It does have major consequences on the citizens of this country. I'll leave you there, Chair, because I know I've asked a lot of questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Honourable
members, when I switch my camera on, please note that I will stop here if it takes too long. Is that Honourable Dr.
Temakwayo?
Please continue.
Yes, please. Can I continue? Yes, I was just saying to the minister when he started, he was talking about taking control of people's life. And this is exactly a measure that shows that he is trying to control people's life. And the first question that I asked was about why shifting the power and replacing the state of disaster with the new regulations under the National Act. And then secondly, to say this is a mere way of allowing the government to continue with strenuous economic restrictions. I mean, only the minister will have permanent power to lock down the country as well and as well force the COVID-19 vaccination. He is the only one who has the power unchecked to instill lockdown without receiving any advice from experts or any medical council, including us as the committee in health, as it has been done. I mean, we were never in actual fact briefed about this. They only came here today to brief us because we forced them to come to come and brief, and it's very much unacceptable. And I would also reiterate to say, we need a briefing on this allegation or complaints that some emails are being deleted without being opened or being read. And if that is what is taking place, then it obviously means that there is a selective choice of the emails that needs to be received by the minister and his committee. And then Regulation 15 deals with people who may refuse to be medically examined. This is clearly a way to micromanage people, really. You are going to arrest people. You are also going to force people to drink medication. Why is this supposed to be this way? So, the minister failed to maintain the proper and failed properly to trace the affected individuals to ensure that they do not transmit virus. So, while you failed in some other things that you were supposed to do, then you come up with this unacceptable regulations that you need to make it into law. We do not in actual fact agree with what you are trying to do. And just to say, concentrate on the infrastructure improvement of hospitals and clinics that are falling apart, and unsolved PPE saga and the general laser fair that is taking place in your department and accompanied by accountability that you don't usually do. No one is happy with this, and we believe that all those emails that were received by you reiterate the fact that it's not necessary. We don't need it. We reject them. Thank you.
Honorable Sengwa, are you back? I know Honorable Sengwa is having a bit of connectivity challenges with load shedding. If she's not here, Honorable Gela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation from our minister and the team. Chairperson, I've got a few questions that I want to ask the minister, but I do fully support the proposed amendment to the National Health Act 2003, proposed by the government via notice published in the Government Gazette on the 15 March 2022. Although I have the following questions to ask to the minister. What is the significance of these amendments or these new regulations from the presentation? Some of the regulation based on the 2003 Health Act came into effect from 2013. Have these not been adequate? And if not, how have you been operating all along? My second question, why is it important to have these regulations? If these regulations are not promulgated, what would be the implication for the country? My third question, are there any other means that the department can deal with the COVID-19 other than these proposed amendments to the health regulations? My last question to the minister, do we need all these regulations to deal with COVID-19, or we can have more COVID-19 specific regulations to deal with COVID-19 pandemic? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I know that our minister will never mislead the country of South Africa, and we believe in you, Minister, whatever that you are saying to us as a minister, but also on your professional as a doctor, you know. And also, I'm happy that you met with a religious sector, with the president, to discuss this regulation. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me also welcome the presentation by the minister and the department, and hasten to state that the proposed amendments are supported. However, Chair, I have two questions to ask. The first one will be, what will be the role of the Department of Health with regard to port health services when Border Management Agency takes over with their borders guards at the ports of entry? Secondly, is there any plan to train the funeral undertakers with regard to the new regulation, especially that they were equally affected by the pandemic? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just have two questions. Also, thank you for the presentation of the minister and the team. First one, will the new regulations lead to the return of the national state of disaster? Second, how have the rural communities been informed about the draft regulations? And what about the involvement of the traditional leadership? Thank you.
Can I come in, Chairperson?
You were very lost. Is there a reason you want to go earlier when we go check him out?
No, it's fine. It's fine, Chairperson. No, thank you. I'll wait.
Honorable Sukers is next. Have you been able to reconnect, Honorable Sukers?
is not Honorable Munyai. Honorable Sukers, I see you on the platform. Are you
here? Martha, proceed.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sukers, we can't hear you. Honorable Sukers, I will go to Honorable Munyai and come back to you after you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me, Honorable Chair?
Can hear you well. Thank you very much.
We 100% welcome the presentation by Minister. By the way, these powers to the ministers, the Minister of Health, is not new. It was there during apartheid. The difference, it was not a democratic state and there was no consultation. And now it's a democratic state. There's a process of consultation. Let me just go direct to my question, Honorable Chair. Our estimate, our esteemed Honorable Minister, who brought concrete presentation before us for consideration. There has been concerns, Honorable Minister, on the effect of the regulation relating to funerals, encroaching on the cultural rights and practices. Has this been considered in your view, Honorable Minister? What, the second question, Honorable Chair, what informed the Minister, the Honorable Minister, to decide on the new regulation when we have the National Health Act in place? My other question, Honorable Chair, what are the current number of COVID-19 cases? And are they such that they would warrant a new regulation? How ready is the department? Can you hear me, Honorable Minister? Honorable Chair?
Yes, Honorable Sheikh, give mom. Yes, you're on.
No, no, I'm not yet done, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Munyai.
I'm not yet done. Your regulation. I'm not yet done. Can I finish, please?
Honorable Munyai, can I finish my what I am saying? Honorable Munyai. I was trying to stop somebody from interfering in what you were asking. Because somebody's mic was on. Please continue, Honorable Munyai.
Thank you for protecting me from disruption. How ready is the department for the fourth wave that is much spoken about in the media, of which you believe it is inevitable? Your answer, please. What will be the role of the Department of Health with regard to... Is there any plan to train the funeral undertakers with regard to the new regulation, especially they were equally affected by the pandemic? Those are my questions, Honorable Chair, and thank you to Honorable Chair and Honorable Minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to try and go back to Honorable Sukers. Mark Lengua has sent questions to me, which I will read towards the end. Honorable Sukers? Honorable Sukers, you can also send your questions to me. I would gladly read them for you.
Send your questions.
Honorable Wilson, you are next.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Ministry for coming to present to us today. I find it
everybody on honey.
Hold on, Honorable Wilson. Honorable Sukers, we can hear you speaking.
Chair, can you hear me now? I am sorry, yes. I just lost, I'm not sure what's happening with my device, but may I proceed?
Please do. I want to protect you because we could hear you speaking, so you may continue now.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Chair, and I apologize to the meeting. Chair, I have a few questions, but I want to join what was asked
before by some of the members to say that the impact and the importance of the current regulations demands that we need to spend significant time on, having a discussion. And so if need be, then we should request that we have a follow-up to discuss this. And I want to also just add to thank the department for the extension. I, however, want to add to what has been said by Honorable Van Staden in the beginning. The regulation should be withdrawn, or we want to add to that and say it should be withdrawn and not promulgated. And many members here has reiterated or articulated the concern that is currently in the public, as well as the impact that we've suffered in the last 3 years under the national state of disaster. So I would want to ask a few questions, but I want to add to the comments that I've made. We need to note, Chair, that South Africans have made significant sacrifices and has been living under abnormal circumstances for the last period, for over 2 years. So society as a whole cannot, has been severely impacted. And I sit on the education the education portfolio committee. And I do oversight in our especially disadvantaged schools. And I want to reiterate, if you just look at what it has done in the education sector and the impact that COVID has had on the mental health of people, regardless of where they find themselves economically, then the abnormality is not sustainable. And we cannot, that is just from a social impact perspective. When we talk about a legal perspective, we cannot tolerate that we live under what we can call a police state. We cannot. We cannot have what is being put forward by the department in light of where we are in the pandemic. South Africans gave the department 21 days. They even allowed for a further month in order for the health system to be stabilized and in order to be able to deal with what was then an unusual health crisis. But we cannot afford this. So as I just want to put it to the minister, that consideration from a social perspective as well as from a legal perspective in terms of our constitutional rights needs to be considered. Chair, in terms of what I want to also emphasize, the government during the period of the initial lockdown and for the last 2 years we've heard about following the science. The same scientists have now called what government has put forward as draft regulations incoherent, illogical, and that it constitutes the real state of disaster. They call the draft regulations ill-conceived, misdirected, and oblivious to the new realities of COVID-19 2 years into the pandemic. So if I consider those comments and I look at the fact that we are sitting with multiple crises within the country and you bring into the mix regulations that will severely impede the rights of South Africans, you are actually adding to a combustion that can affect this country. So the minister, not only from a legal perspective, but in terms of a social and stability perspective of the nation, needs to seriously consider what they are proposing. There is no justification for what they are proposing. I will go to the questions. One, the current submission process, and thank you for the extension. What is the composition of the task team or the working group that is going to review the submission? And how many members are on it, and who will they be? What are their qualifications? There are allegations that we received yesterday during the march that the process is being compromised and submissions are being deleted. Will the minister launch an urgent investigation and provide a report to the committee? Then, given that 150,000 submissions have been received, it appears that the overall timing of the call for comment and expiry date
of the current stopgap regulations do not allow for sufficient time for careful consideration. This also creates a suspicion that this is a mere pro forma process. So the current regulations will lapse in 30 days. The comment period for the proposed regulations closes on the 23rd of April, or the 24th, I heard. And if it is the intention that the amendments to the regulation issued in terms of the Health Act will replace the stopgap regulation, this leaves barely 1 week for a detailed review. So we require clarity from the DOH what the planned regulatory timeframe is, and is ample time being allowed to consider comments. So also, is it possible that the current regulations will be renewed? If it is, let us either allow them to lapse or envisage now the possibility that you will introduce more stopgap regulations and allow ample time for comment on them. I'm talking about process, not in terms of supporting or standing behind it. I'm talking about process. So as initial comments are envisaged that the regulations would only be enforced for 30 days, it is then necessary to ask for comment again if the intention is under to review for another 30 days or more. Then I have asked the question around the no-fault compensation fund. I sent a letter already last year on how it works. Mention has been made there of a designated judge. I spoke to the deputy minister at the same time last year as well. We need to know, our constituency need to know, how is this fund being managed and who is managing the fund. So if we can call for a meeting to discuss specifics on how to conduct the oversight of the consultation process, as well as chair the no-fault compensation fund. I wasn't in the first part of the meeting, so I may have missed some of this. Then mention was made about consultation with the South African Council of Churches. So we need to ask here, evangelical and Pentecostal churches have millions of members. Did the president actually meet with those groups as well? And we would be more than willing to facilitate that, Chair. I don't know if I'm out of time because, as I said, I've got a problem with my device and I cannot see you, Chair. So if you can indicate if I'm out of time.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Sukers. You're out of time. I will give you one short question, but you are welcome to write those questions, of course, to the minister and the department also.
Yes. My question, I will make my last question. If the department does not intend, will the department list COVID-19 as a notifiable medical condition, or will it differentiate between the variants of the virus? Listing the Delta virus as notifiable medical condition, but not the Omicron variant. If the department does not intend to differentiate between the variants, what is the scientific justification or reason for not differentiating when Omicron is not sufficiently harmful to be considered a public health concern or risk? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Stukers will be followed, Honorable Wilson will be followed by Honorable Chirwa, Honorable Sheikh Imam, and I will then read the questions of Honorable Slengwa and then ask myself my own questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And again, I say thank you to the department and the Minister for coming to brief us. I find it very frustrating, however, that it was on the insistence of this portfolio that we get a briefing by the Minister. Because nothing was ever discussed with us, and we are the portfolio of health, and we are the portfolio that holds the Department of Health, including the Minister, accountable. And it concerns me that perhaps, and I'm not saying it was intentional, that this portfolio was sidestepped in this process. And I ask, please, that we are there to fulfill a role. We have a mandate to do oversight over Act bills and everything else, and including holding the Minister and the various departments in the Department of Health to account. We must take cognizance of this. It is our mandate, and we can't decide it. That being said, may I please just open to say that we have seen horrific flooding, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, as well as the Free State, and areas of the Eastern Cape. And on behalf of ourselves, I uplift all the families who have lost children, loved ones, homes, valuable, everything that they possess in these floods. And we pray that God gives them strength and peace, uplifts them, and that they are supported in every way that they are needed. Chair, I have a couple of questions here. Principally, yes, I agree with the Honourable from Staden. I do not see COVID on the list of notifiable diseases. So I'm not sure why we're using the notifiable diseases part of this act to essentially change everything. If it's not notifiable, it's not notifiable. And then it brings into question the rest of the act. I want to deal quickly with a couple of things. The one is the EVDS system. Everyone now requires to have the vaccination certificates to either travel overseas or to enter public places, to enter events and those kinds of things. Yet the EVDS system is an absolute disaster. I submitted letters to Dr. Buthelezi earlier this week with regards to this. We are inundated, and I mean inundated, with complaints from people who are trying to access their vaccination certificates on the online portal. The information is incorrect. They're not there. Their last vaccinations haven't been registered, and they had them 3 or 4 months ago. The information, ID numbers, names, etc., are captured incorrectly, so they don't have access to that. There's no point in putting all of this in place if people can't get the absolute basic requirements, and that's a vaccination certificate. It is causing huge frustration. It is very, very time consuming for us. And this situation needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed urgently. All of this comes to naught in this act as far as vaccination certificates are concerned, if people can't even access them in the first place or get the correct information. At the start of our first lockdown, and the whole point of that first lockdown was for the Department of Health to get on top of our then not so good health facilities, ensure that there was infrastructure to cope with COVID, to make sure that there was sufficient beds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In actual fact, what we have seen since then is an absolute backward trend in health facilities. They are not coping. There's no infrastructure, there's no staffing, there's no assistance, there's no meds. So we missed the starting blocks right from day one, as far as I'm concerned. With regards to, and I'm very, very curious. So now, if a person goes to a hospital, they suspect he's got COVID, and they want him to undergo a treatment, a testing, and the person refuses. It may be on medical grounds, it may be on religious grounds, it could be on any grounds, the person now refuses. So now the act says, no, he may now get a legal representative, he or she, and the Department of Health can apply for a court order to force this person to undergo treatment or isolation. So I'm going to use myself as an example. So if I go to the hospital, they suspect I have COVID, they want to do testing, or whatever it is, take bodily fluids from wherever they want to, and I refuse. What then? I walk out of that hospital, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to chain me to a bed? Are you going to arrest me? How are you going to hold these people in a hospital? I don't understand this. Off they go. They trickle out of the hospital. They know they're going to be forced to do something that they don't want to do. They walk out of the hospital and disappear or go into hiding or whatever. They can go and get a legal representative. With the current backlogs in South Africa's courts at the moment, how long does it take to get a court order? By the time you've got a court order to sort somebody out and force them to undergo treatment or force them to undergo quarantine, it could be all over. It could be all over. I seriously question the legalities here, because you cannot hold that person in a hospital against their will unless somebody comes in and arrests them or chains them to a bed. I don't know how you're going to manage this. There is absolutely no point in making changes to an act that cannot be implemented. And I don't see how you can implement it. I really do not see how you can implement it. People coming into the country. We recently had a South African citizen return from overseas. He underwent, they suspected he had COVID on his arrival. Port Health bundled him into an ambulance, took him to a hospital 80 kilometers away. They then insisted that he had to go into quarantine. He wanted to go home and quarantine. He had more than sufficient facilities to do it. They insisted that he go to a hotel to quarantine, which he had to pay for. He had to book in for 5 days and pay 2,000 rand a night. It took us 3 days to get him out of there because he was in a situation to isolate his home. And that is what that is. And then we got him home at a cost of 6,000 rand. PCR tests at the airport, and I think this is something we have to look at very carefully. The cost of having PCR tests is astronomical, and I'm sorry. As far as I'm concerned, this has turned into a money-making racket. Quarantine facilities, during COVID, we used Telkom and Eskom facilities. They were disgusting. They were not clean. The food was disgusting. There was insufficient facilities to cope with people. I'm trying to, but you know, when we get asked to do these kind of things on such short notice, it becomes very difficult. And then just finally, funerals. I live in a rural province. I travel great lengths around a rural province. Every Saturday or Sunday, I see funerals taking place. Not one person, not two persons, hundreds of people under tents in marquees. Who is monitoring this? You cannot put those kind of implementations in, and if somebody is there to monitor it and ensure compliance, you cannot. It is impossible. It is impossible. I did an oversight at a hospital the other day. 200 people in the queue sitting on top of each other. Thank you, Chair. The morgues are full. I don't know what to say. There's no point in passing an act that cannot be implemented. We oppose this. It is against human rights, and it cannot be implemented. It cannot be monitored. It cannot be sustained. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. Minister, you mentioned that the severity of infections has reduced dramatically, and you also state why that is, pointing out to vaccinations, that infections have seen increase and decreasing severity and etc., right? And also that the curve is at the bottom or that the lowest that we have ever seen or we have seen in a while. What then justifies the absorption of the draft regulations into the National Health Act? Has there been like scientific evidence or information that we don't know of that probes towards the probability of us returning to where we were? That informs this particular decision? And if there is, why isn't the country being taken into confidence and the information that's held by the state being shared with the country? Please kindly share the scientific information stating the precursors that informs this decision. And secondly, if these regulations, as per the assertions of the minister, can be removed in future and put back in and removed again, why are they being absorbed now if they can just be re-implemented should the need for them arise in future? And number three, is the rating of the public health care systems for the absorption of the draft regulations also going to be matched? I'm asking this because the responsibility has to match the kind of powers that are being given to the minister through these draft regulations. On your side as a minister, what responsibilities that will result in access to healthcare being increased, that will result in more healthcare workers being absorbed and other healthcare issues being that are imminent in the department being addressed with the urgency that sees the absorption of these draft regulations being absorbed into the National Health Act? I'm asking this also because we always hear about what we have to do. We have to vaccinate, we have to wear a mask, we have to self-isolate, we have to quarantine, but never what the minister and the department are going to do. And if we do hear what the minister and the department are going to do, you always do a shoddy job. Like, for instance, even with contact tracing, we saw that from 2019 December, up until the very end, it was a shoddy job that was being done by the department. So can we see how the department and the minister is going to match on their part, as part of their responsibility, the need to have these draft regulations being enacted in the National Health Act? And I don't know which number I'm on now, but Regulation 15 deals with
persons who may refuse to be medically examined, right? The concern here obviously is bodily autonomy, body choices, and liberty, which seem to be threatened by this particular regulation. What are these? But more particularly, I want to ask, what are these, in inverted commas, other measures that the regulation speaks of? Because it's not in the draft regulations, and as we don't know what these other measures are. We support vaccination, but we absolutely condemn any attempt to make it mandatory. Please clarify to the committee what these other measures are and why they aren't included in the draft regulation, so we know what to expect, especially in regards to Regulation 15. And self-isolation is, I mean, we've seen this. Even during the hard lockdown, self-isolation is impossible for most of the country. This was covered widely on documentaries and the news. There's issues with informal settlements. Homelessness is a pandemic on its own. What infrastructure is the department developing in the interim or making available for those who won't be able to self-isolate? Can we be appraised with the names and places of these facilities so we can go there and see them as well? As part of you matching the powers that you have and matching the responsibility of what you require to happen consistently, I would also like to know how you will be able to contact Trace now consistently when you weren't able to do it efficiently during the peak of the pandemic. Is there like technological developments that the department is implementing in this moment that will see this being a success or being done consistently, or the very same systems that we saw at play are still in place? Do you still have the records, for example, from previous contact tracing? How is it being stored? Can you just appraise us on this thing of contact tracing? Because I think if it's the same system from the previous 2 years, then we already know that you're going to do a very terrible job at doing contact tracing, and that's why the need to have it here if you won't be able to do it. And if you will be able to do it, how will you be able to do it differently and more efficiently than what you've done in the past? And lastly, what is the point of requiring vaccination certificates from people leaving the country if the country they are going to isn't asking for vaccine certificates? Thank you very much, Shepherdson.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, I think my first concern is, Chairperson, to you and the Minister, I think you should be convinced by now that you have not convinced us, members of parliament, who are the public representatives representing 59 million people in this country. If you have not managed to convince us, then how is it you're expecting to convince the people on the ground? Should the first point of contact not be engaging with this portfolio committee of health so that we could deliberate on this matter extensively and then come to a decision whether it is in the interest of the people we serve or not? Now, I'm not sure whether this is an omission, whether it's just disrespect for the committee or whatever it is, but clearly I think, Mr. Minister, you need to understand that we represent these people and we need to be convinced. Your department has not been able to convince the people on the ground about anything. Even on the vaccines, I think the anti-vaxxers have done a better job than your department has done. And SEPRA, on ivermectin, exactly the same situation. And now it's exactly the same thing with the regulation. So until you get the message to the people on the ground in ABC language that they can understand that and make an informed decision, Minister, you know, it is not the appropriate route to go. Right now, the impression that is being created that your department, through draconian intervention, want to just implement these things without proper consultation. Now, I'm glad you're extending it. 1 week is not going to solve the problem. But I think the question I want to ask, in all the responses you had, how many responses did we have for and how many again? Because what we don't want to hear is that we've had 1 million of those objecting and assuming that the other 58 million people who don't have access to internet, nothing of that sort, are in support of it. You know, I see that one of the reasons for this intervention is, and you talk about anybody that does not have an internet and does not have a phone and disposable eating utensils. Minister, These people don't have food, let alone disposable eating utensils and internet and phones. They don't even have food. They are dying of malnutrition and hunger, and I think you know about the steps. Let me not rather go in. Now, I want to come on the issue very quickly on masks. Your department has not done a single thing to convince the people on the ground whether masks, the wearing of masks, is healthy or not. Taking into consideration, Minister, that people are expected to sometimes wear these masks for 8 to 10 hours at a time. Yet my understanding is that every Morgan, whether it is the mouth, whether it's the nose, whether it's eyes, all have got a specific purpose. Take employees in a retail sector. They spend the entire day wearing the mask and they see customers all the time. Nobody has even addressed that, and I'm glad that I think Professor Madi raised some concerns about the issue of masks, but your department has done nothing. Have you all engaged with the pro and anti-vaxxers and all on every other issue? No, you're not doing that either. So that's the other problem that we are sitting with. Let's look at your no-fault compensation, Minister. It's an absolute mess. You're forcing it down the throats of the people to believe that most of those cases have nothing to do with the vaccine. Yet there is so much evidence from the anti-vaxxers, if that's the term. And by the way, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I've even got my booster jab as well. But that's my personal choice. Where they indicate that even the vaccines are not safe. So how do you expect us to be able to support this intervention of yours when you haven't convinced us so that we too can go out and engage our people? And what happens here is this: in the process, and we've raised this many a times, not in this particular department, Chairperson, but generally about public participation, only a select few get the opportunity due to the resources and things to be able to participate in a process of this nature. Now, at this stage, Minister, we are not convinced that this is in the best interest of the people of this country. As far as the NFP is concerned, we believe that you need greater consultation. You need to convince us before you even go to the people on the ground so we can have buy-in. You've already got legal threats that are coming that this matter is going to be taken to court. Despite all that, you want to continue and accelerate this process of wanting to implement this. And I think it is not the route to go. I think we need to understand that we all have a role to play. In the end, maybe some of your interventions might be the right thing to do. But first of all, there is no proper understanding of why you are going this route when the numbers are so low. Almost COVID-19 is almost a thing of the past, and it's not even one of the notifiable diseases in terms of your latest COVID list. So we can't seem to understand what is the urgency. Now, I'm not questioning your integrity. I have total confidence in you, Minister, but I think we are not going about it the correct way. I think we need a relook in this. We cannot infringe on the rights of individuals in the manner we are being, in a draconian style. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for all of those questions. I would even want to say comments. Very interesting for me to listen to all of the various views, which I would also like to speak about a little bit later. Let me just go to the questions of Honorable Sengwa. Minister, she has 4 questions for you. Whether government has a standard by which it will work to when providing accommodation for those who need to isolate but are unable to do so due to lack of formal residency. Second question is whether there is continuous funding to hospitals to provide PPEs across the country. Third question, what are the anticipated effects of the flooding in KZN in providing safe spaces and places for isolation? And fourthly, how will and what standards will government impose on public-private partnerships to ensure that quality hospitals and clinics are established and run over the next 10 years in relation to the requirements of the above legislation? And honourable members, for myself, I find it very strange often when we deal with challenges which are put forward, and especially in terms of the, and let me also say, suggestions that are put forward, and recommendations put forward, when we deal with issues which are important for people and to save people's lives. You know, when COVID started, we were the portfolio committee that was right at the full face. We were the portfolio, the people who were right there with every attempt to save lives. And we had a slogan, name, save lives, saving the economy. We were there right at the onset, and we were urging the department to do certain things with regards to this thing called coronavirus and coronavirus infection and the spread of the coronavirus infection, and also spreading, combating the spread of that infection. We were there in the beginning when we said the facilities need to be put in place. We put up fights for field hospitals, for ventilators, CPAPs, oxygen, etc. And at every turn, when something had been put in place, we also the same people who then object to what had been put in place. I find this very strange. And I also find it illogical that when one realizes something is not in place, an attempt is made to put it in place, that one then objects to that being put in place. You know, we were caught so unawares with this coronavirus, and indeed not just South Africa, but the entire world. We then realized that there weren't regulations in place to manage this thing called coronavirus infection. And we then had the national disaster regulations put in place in order to assist us, even us as members of the portfolio committee, to talk with the department and to make certain that we do get people to get attention and to save lives, including the wearing of masks, social distancing, using of sanitizers, washing of hands. There are two things here which are very important. That those regulations have contributed to the decrease in the number of infections. There's no way that we can say that wearing of a mask should not happen. It is what has contributed to us having a lower number of infections in our country. It is also true that we have just come through our summer period and that we will be going into a winter period. It is also true that the countries which have now been in their winter period have experienced increased numbers of infections. It is just such that we are lucky, fortunate, that this particular variant called Omicron has not been as dangerous, if I want to put in simple terms, to the people in the light of getting serious illness or even death. And even that we can base on which some of the members have raised, the vaccines, the natural immunity, the regulations with regards to as I called, as I mentioned, the mask wearing, etc., the non-pharmaceutical prevention strategies, and then also the prevention strategies. The fact that the department had risen to the occasion and had put all of these things in place in order to save lives. But I do remember a time when the same portfolio committee, when vaccines were brought about, people said, please bring the vaccines. Now the vaccines, they say, why do you bring the vaccines? When is here? Why not this vaccine? Why not that best vaccine? Not, and it, I guess that's the nature of the human being. That when something is brought, we ask for something and then we say, no, we don't want a red lollipop. Give me a red, green lollipop. So just as a reminder that just 2-3 days ago, we heard that there are two new sub-lineages, the BA4 and the BA5, which we are reminded as not just cause a spike, but when I looked at the charts which are made
by the scientists, the medical scientists, then you see that that spread is happening exactly, or the transmission rather, is happening exactly as the others had, whether we talk beta, delta, any of the other ways. It has been the exact pattern. It starts small, everything starts small, and it grows in time. So let us also be mindful that we are approaching a winter period, and therefore it is important to then have something in place where we had nothing in the beginnings. I've taken you to where we've had nothing. There had to be such quick interventions, urgent interventions, to save lives, to save the economy. Now there's an attempt to put something in place that can be used to manage similar incidents, challenges, etc., even a possible fifth wave as we go into the winter period. Also, as a medical scientist myself, because I've heard many talk about medical scientists and what the medical scientists are saying, I'm going to give my opinion. I would say that these regulations are extremely important. There must be, every single country must have in place regulations to manage notifiable diseases. And where we had realized that we had a deficit or a gap, we needed to fill that gap. And so, Honorable Minister and the Department, myself as the chairperson of this portfolio committee, want to thank you for thinking about the regulations first, secondly, for bringing it to the attention of the public, thirdly, for allowing a process of public participation on these regulations. But I also want to urge you to work with speed, because we are now at the middle of April. Next month we'll be entering our winter period. We've now seen the floods in KZN, for example, of the challenges there. And these things can happen at any point in time. So I'm hoping that you will be able to make these regulations, it's not enacted, but it's gazetted. To gazette these regulations and to make certain that we are protected as a people and as a nation from any possible future similar infections, notifiable diseases, but also this one in particular. As I had stated, we are just going to be entering the winter period and we do not know what is lying ahead for us. So, Honourable Minister, those are all the points raised by the members of the Portfolio Committee. Quite a number, but there are 14 of us who have raised concerns with you. We are now at 16 minutes past 11. We thought we would take 2 hours. We are going to take an extra hour, meaning we will try to finish by 12 o'clock today. So you can do your utmost best to answer all of these concerns of all of the members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I do have a bit of pressure that I've got another commitment. So I would appreciate if we could be done before 12, because I do have another commitment. At 12 o'clock, so I would need to just be ready before 12. But thank you very much for the opportunity, and thanks for the honourable members. I'll try and put together a number of points which have been raised, so that we don't go point by point, but combine some of the points. Firstly, let me just correct honourable members who said that we have been forced to come to the Portfolio Committee. I mean, nothing can be so far from the truth. We were requested by the committee to come and share this matter, and we immediately agreed. Now, honorable members, what we are doing here, as we said earlier on, it's exactly in terms of the legal procedure that you have an Act of Parliament passed in 2003, the National Health Act, and the advocate, the legal person from the department did go through the procedure. With in terms of that act, the act empowers the minister to pass regulations the regulations which we are amending were passed in 2017 by the minister who was in office at the time. And what we are doing is to amend. Now, even when those regulations were passed, as the report indicated, because the Act itself also makes provision for the minister to can actually make regulations and promulgate and gazette them without public consultation if the minister is of the view that there is urgency in terms of promulgating those regulations. That's within the law. That's what the law which has been passed by Parliament enables the Minister of Health, and you will find similar provisions within various other legal frameworks of other portfolios. And that's really to make sure that the executive of government can function and can provide particular regulations without the necessity, once the framework is passed by the Parliament, by the National Assembly and the Council, Ministerial Council of Provinces. Once that framework of the law is passed, the ministers of those portfolios, if it's catered for in their legal framework to promulgate regulations, either some of those regulations provide for public consultations, but in certain circumstances that they can be implemented immediately, as it is the case, for instance, with the Disaster Management Act, but also in terms of the National Health Act, in terms of provision where the matter is looked upon as urgent. So that, let's just lay that that matter to to rest. That any notion, therefore, that we avoided, once we got an indication from the chair of the committee that there are certain requests, we have to, the only thing which we had to agree on was in terms of the logistics, the time and so on, the day and time when this could be done. So I want to just lay that to rest, that any notion that we came here first must really just be laid to rest, because it's actually unfounded. In terms of just a few other matters which I'll go through from the contribution of members, the fact that COVID is not listed in the list. Now, honourable members, the list as provided in the regulations will not be exhaustive. It will have categories. There are certain which you will find in, you know, because they already registered, they exist. But the infectious diseases change. COVID-19 as it is did not exist when the regulations were first promulgated, but there's a category in terms of pathogens which cause respiratory diseases. I'll ask the advocate just to later on just to read the exact clause which talks to this. So there's going to be other, not even a variant of COVID. There will be other viruses which will come. We don't know when. It's going to depend whether they are in terms of what category of infectious disease. You may not have in the list the specific virus which causes that particular disease, but it will be looked upon and managed in terms of notifiable conditions, in terms of the category in which, that it may be, if it's a hemorrhagic fever, it will be dealt with in terms of notifiable medical conditions in terms of hemorrhagic fevers. So it may not be, there may be a new virus which causes hemorrhagic fever, but you can't say, because that particular virus in itself, it will then be added once it is, that particular strain is actually, so that is not a factor in terms of what we are dealing with. The category is there, and that's how COVID has been dealt with as a notifiable medical condition. The emails issue we'll look at. I'm quite convinced that it is a technical matter which will sort out. And as we have said, we have provided now also a WhatsApp which creates even further opportunities. In terms of the view of some of the members that we must totally withdraw the regulations, again, I draw your attention to the fact that this is within the law which has been passed by Parliament, within the regulations as provided for, which are purely being amended, which have been in place, promulgated almost 4.5 to 5 years ago, as already indicated. So, and let me just also again, I know that there are other members who actually went as far as saying that this, in terms of these regulations, the Minister of Health is now assuming powers to can cause lockdown, to can really lock down people, force them to be tested and so on. Again, honorable members, just to say to you and to the public, there's no such a thing. There's no such a thing. If you listen carefully, first of all, just in terms of, you know, there's very limited, you know, powers in terms of these regulations. And what is being fundamentally, if you look at anything, there's actually nothing different from the kind of basic remaining protections. If you look at where we come from over the last 2 years, all that this largely these regulations want to protect in terms of public health measures is the basic minimum in terms of making sure that protection, and I know some of you also questioned the question of wearing of masks. This after a bit of uncertainty earlier on in 2020, the World Health Organization and scientists throughout the world did a lot of work in terms of confirming that, because as a droplet infection, as an infection which spreads by droplets, when you cough, when you, you know, excrete from the mouth and so on, once those are trapped through the mask, that limits the spread. And we've seen a very clear, you know, benefits of that when we look at, just look at, you know, when many more people used the mask in the year 2020. We didn't even have any flu infection during the course of the year. And over the last 2 years, because of the use of masks, much more in 2020, but even in 2021, a little bit more, not only in terms of COVID, even in terms of the spread of other respiratory diseases. Very much, you know, just the one which comes every year, which is influenza. Very little of that actually happened. So if the people who still question whether masks work, I don't know what more evidence do honorable members still require. In terms of the fact that the allegation that the regulation infringes on the rights of people, again, I think that is very far from the truth. In terms of the control measures, the public health measures of where we started in 2020, the only basic ones remaining now, it's basically in terms of the protection of indoors, making sure that masks are worn indoors and no more in outdoors because of the level of spread of the COVID currently, and other protection measures. But across the board, there's still a few. I mean, scientists are like all of us as members of parliament, politicians and so on. We'll never agree on everything, whether you talk about any profession in, for that matter, whether you go to lawyers, whether you go to accountants, and architects or whatever, engineers. The medical science profession is also the same. But you look at the bulk of where the majority of views and observations on particular measures. Now, the use of masks, as I've said, is one of those, especially indoors, which across not only in South Africa, if you can, you know, if you look at the advice also from the World Health Organization, that is very firm. The issue of the fact that respiratory infections such as COVID, and we have seen it. I mean, it's not even just a basic science, but we have seen it that one of the major triggers of, you know, spikes of infection, it's a crowded gatherings. Especially indoor crowded gatherings. So one of the second remaining area in which these regulations want to assist in protecting the public as empowered by the Act is in terms of gatherings, That's why it's the limit on the size of gatherings without vaccination, because vaccination does help to protect. And when we have to have bigger gatherings, that those must be accompanied by vaccination or a negative PCR test. And if they are, if those gatherings are indoors, they must also be accompanied by wearing of masks. So in terms of infringement on social liberties, really, there is very limited in terms of anything, whether we talk about social gatherings for whatever use, whether it's in arts and culture, in sport, family gatherings, other forms of social, all those, you know, are happening. So in terms of this infringement on people's rights, I don't know what exactly the honorable members who are raising this are talking about. And again, I mean, I've already mentioned that the issue of that this empowers the Minister of Health to can enforce the lockdown. There's nothing like that. There's just absolutely nothing. They're very limited in terms of basic public health measures. Forced medical treatment, we've already mentioned that this is in specific situations where somebody who has not just because this regulations, while being prompted the amendment, while being prompted by the fact that we still have COVID as a threat, and just coming to that, Honourable Sheikh Imam, I'm really disappointed to hear from you that as far as you are concerned, the COVID is a thing of the past. That's really what is causing problems, where you know, people believe that the COVID is done and over. That is far from the truth. We can see, I've already indicated from the science, you can talk to, I mean, if you, you know, we can make available an analysis from Professor Abdul Karim, who was the first chair of the Ministerial Advisory Committee, just analyzing the trend of the COVID over the last 2 years, the trend in terms of the ups and downs, the waves, where we are now that it is a trough, in terms of the trend of what we have seen over the last 2 years, that every 3 months, the same trend has happened. It's only if in the next 2 to 3 months we don't have a spike again, as we have seen, not only in South Africa, but in other countries as well. So the notion that COVID is gone and done with, we are not there. We're all hoping that it's going to happen. But that notion is quite misplaced. I must say to you, if that is what informs your rejection of the interventions, which are very basic, minimum, actually. So the issue of there is no such a thing. The provisions which are made there, as you heard from the advocate from the department, these are also buttressed by legal support in terms of the fact that in a case where somebody who has proven to be infected with any of the notifiable medical conditions, which can be passed on to other people in terms of how it is spread, and that person refusing to take the necessary medical intervention, there must be an approach to the court. There must be the only way in which certain interventions can be forced is with the support of a court order. And it looks as if some of the honorable members have actually disregarded the fact that in the regulations themselves, which are derived from the 2017 regulations, and as we are now amending, but that requirement for a court order, the only thing which is now different in the current regulations, instead of just the high court, what we are proposing is that even lower courts, like magistrates, could be able to be approached if in a local area where there's such an event, the health authorities should be able to approach even a lower court to can obtain such a court order. But that is what is being provided for. So the issue that there will be forced vaccination, forced treatment, is really, I don't know if honorable members can go and just look into properly. You will find that there is no such a provision in terms of this. The question of whether this is based on science, of course it is, as I've already indicated. The science behind this one is that COVID is not over, that there is expectation that there will be another wave of COVID. We don't know exactly when. The factors which influence that we know is the variant, but also as more people gather, especially indoors. And that's why, as Honorable Jacobs has indicated, the countries which have gone through their winter have experienced spikes. And that's why in countries like China, currently as we speak, a big city like Shanghai, which has got more than 20 million inhabitants, is currently under lockdown. And that's because in various other countries have got to reinstate some of the control measures as, you know, one, the question of variants, which currently we are getting weekly reports, sometime on a daily basis, in terms of updating of the various variants, which are still doing rounds. Fortunately, up to now, this has been only variants which have been of interest, as the WHO classifies them, but not variants of concern. They have not been accompanied by a spread of exponential spread in South Africa. But it has happened. It's happening in other countries. Those variants, what is driving the rise in infections in some of the countries is also variants. And the fact that they had also gone very quite lower down in terms of control measures. So that is a science. It's a science which we listen to. But as I've mentioned, even our South African scientists have never at all times been at one. There are particular areas which we understand some of the scientists why they criticize. It's because the measures, the regulations which have been published encompass broader, you know, controls in terms of surveillance of for control of notifiable conditions, not only in terms of where we are, because it's an amendment of the existing regulations. Some of those, for instance, let me go straight to issues of quarantine, issues of isolation. We have already issued directives which says that we are not at the current moment in terms of COVID where we are. We are not continuing with contact tracing, with a compulsory quarantine and with facilities specific for that. But because the regulations are providing not just for now, and that's why I said even on the onset, that what we are considering as we go towards completion of this process, we are also based on this kind of advices, looking at separating between the amendments which are just, you know, upgrading from the broader control of notifiable medical conditions as distinct from the measures which we still need specifically for the COVID as one of the existing pandemics which we specifically have to deal with. So we're looking at that. Some of the scientists we know we have spoken to, and we've spoken to them, and their concern has been the fact that the regulation stream bring as if we're going back to the measures on COVID in terms of contact tracing, quarantine, isolation, as we did in 2020 and early 2021. So that's why we're looking at possibility of separating what will be just standard measures when there is a new notifiable condition, especially a respiratory one, which spread in a particular manner. But as compared to where we are in terms of the control of COVID and the measures which we are no more utilizing. So we're looking at that. And the, some of the scientists which some of the honorable members quoted, their concern was specifically on the question of reinstating issues of quarantine and isolation and contact tracing, which we have already passed in terms of those. The issue of, I think I've dealt with the allegation of infringement on religious rights. There is no such an infringement. The issue, where we talk about gatherings is gatherings across the board. There is no specific, you know, measure which is aimed at religious gatherings. And religious gatherings also benefit from the provisions which are there in terms of where without the vaccination check, you can have up to 1,000 people gathered with a 1 meter distance. As a maximum indoors and 2,000 outdoors. That also caters for religious gatherings. So there is no specific infringement on religious freedom. The significance of the regulations is simply to make sure that we can be able to continue to be protected. And I want to agree with, I think it was Honorable Sukers who said that South Africans have made a lot of sacrifices over time. We agree with that. But what we want to say is that in recognition of that, we are saying that it will be irresponsible as government to then lead the country into an approach which does not protect the sacrifices which many people have made. All that we want to make possible is to guide the country in a manner such that the sacrifices which have been made are not brought to zero, that all those which the things which have, we have done, which have brought us where we are, where we're able to manage the pandemic, that we should continue, even as we're looking forward to all the warnings that as we go into winter, as we get more and more gatherings indoors rather than outdoors, and as the possibility, as various variants are coming through, that a rise in infections and the fifth wave is likely to happen, we should not be at the stage where we have dropped everything and now nothing. I mean, people are just so vulnerable that even the basic measures, which are the very few, three only, which is the mask, which is the control in terms of how we gather, especially indoors, and also in terms of our points of entry. On the points of entry, maybe quickly, let me just say that in terms of the approach now is to leave the issue of those who are leaving the country, leave it to the measures required by the country of destination. There are still many countries where the idea was to make sure that just to guide South Africans, because many countries still require a vaccination certificate, and some also require, in addition, a PCR test. But our approach going forward is that that should be South Africans who are traveling should study what is required by the airlines, if it's an airline or whatever mode of transport, but also especially the country of destination. So the significance of these regulations is really to make sure that we can be protected, that we don't lose the investment which we have made in terms of the protection, which has done us well up to where we are today. The role of the border management authorities versus Port Health. Port Health, in terms of the new approach of the border management authority, the actual function at the borders will be under the border management authority, but the regulations, the policy will still come from Department of Health, but the actual operation, Port Health will operate also under the auspices of the Border Management Authority. The training of funeral undertakers, I think a number of honorable members raised that. Indeed, we will be, I think, from the, our environmental health side, that process will continue of sharing information and availing information and training. In terms of whether we've also considered rural areas, indeed, in terms of the consultation process, that's why we also thank honorable members who pointed out that emails may not be accessible to everybody, but we know that even in the rural areas, WhatsApp, you know, is many people even in rural areas have access to WhatsApp. Consultation also in the process. I'm sure that in some of the submissions, also people in the rural areas and also traditional authorities will be commenting. The current infections, currently, as I've mentioned earlier on, that we are on the trough in terms of the lower ebb of the curve, where the infection numbers are sort of, you know, on day to day, on week to day, they are fluctuating, but generally much lower than where we were in November and in December, end of November, end of December, and even early January. The significant note at this stage is that, nevertheless, we have not gone to the lowest level of where we were at the end of October 2021. So we have, because of the fact that the mutations are happening, as we are informed by the scientists, we have not gone to the very lowest level. As you would see that even in terms of the positivity rate in October last year, we have even reached the lowest level of 1%. And with the current, even though it's at the lower level, we have not even reached that 1%. So the numbers fluctuate. Some days, like I think yesterday, we're just around 2,000, on weekends, usually we go below 1,000 infections, but we're still in the area where we're watching every day because there are always these indications that there are spikes here and there, which we have to make sure that we can follow. Chairperson, I know that we don't have much time. I'm just trying to see the time to consider the submissions. Yes, this is happening as the submissions are coming in. I can assure honourable members and members of the public that we take this very seriously. We are looking. We're not waiting for the end. As I said, now from the 16th we have extended to 24, but the analysis is happening on a continuous basis. We have a team, you know, within the department which brings in also other specialists who are able to help us in the analysis. But at the end of the day, this is a process which within the law, within the National Health Act, it's now in the hands of the Ministry and Department of Health. But what we want to assure everybody is that we take all the submissions seriously, and that's why we are concerned about where it said that emails have been deleted, and we're going to make a very serious follow-up. Whether we differentiate based on variants, no. Even in terms of notifiable medical conditions, no. As I've said, it's categories. It's hemorrhagic fever conditions, pathogens which cause respiratory diseases in terms of SARS-CoV is one of those which is classified as one of the pathogens which cause respiratory disease. It may not be necessarily said COVID-19, but also in terms of COVID-19, we don't then classify in terms of every variant, because the variants, the basic way in which the disease, the pathogenesis or the pathophysiology, how the pathogen causes the disease and how the disease manifests, it's not very different. It's just a question of the transmissibility and sometimes the severity of the illness, but the actual physiology of the disease remains the same. So that's why we treat it as one, as COVID-19, irrespective of the variants. Of course, the question, I think I've already dealt with the issue which honourable members believe that we are forced. We have not been forced to come to this meeting. It's part of when we are asked to come. You know, the law and empowers us to make regulations. But once we get an indication that the committee would like to engage, we are there. We are available to come and engage. I've already dealt with. Honourable member wanted to know why regulations when infections are going down. I've already indicated that there is a pattern of over the last 2 years. We have seen up to this fourth wave that this is a pattern, and therefore we can't relax simply because, as it has happened in other waves, we have been here before where there is very low infections. The only difference is that some of those, when it happens, people have not been vaccinated. So that's the difference. But our vaccination rate is not as high as other countries, which are at 90%. So we have to be concerned, and that's why we still need further protection. I've dealt with already the issue of isolation and quarantine, that it's in terms of future, in terms of current, in terms of the current where we are with COVID-19, we are not going to use the quarantine and isolation and contact tracing. That's a matter behind us. But because the regulations look at the future, other pandemics and other notifiable conditions, that's why we're looking at separating what is required just for COVID now and what we still require for future pandemics and notifiable medical conditions. Clearly, Honorable Sheikh Imam, again to say the notion that this is draconian, I don't know what really constitutes draconian. In terms of wearing of masks, in terms of making sure that people don't gather in big crowds without social distancing, and also making sure that when that happens, it must be with particular protection, including vaccination, and also making sure that when people come into the country, they must also be protected in terms of vaccination. I don't know. If you regard this as draconian, then I don't know really to you what would be any public health measure. And that would be interesting for us to know what would constitute public health protection. to you if simple measures such as this are looked to you, appear to you as being draconian. Honorable Chair, I think I've tried, and I will just ask Advocate Makosic just to deal with the issue of that COVID is not in the list, because there are a number of honorable members who continue that. If we can just allow him just specifically on that, but otherwise, with the time available, I think, thank you very much, if you could allow him.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Yes, I will allow him. Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. In terms of the 2017 regulations, NHR 1, Table 1, Item 18, provides for respiratory disease caused by a novel respiratory pathogen. And it includes example of novel respiratory pathogens include a novel influenza A virus or a MERS coronavirus. And this is the basis on which COVID-19 was dealt with within that framework. This NHRA has not been amended and is still part of the existing regulations. Thanks a lot, Honorable Chair and Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much. Honorable Minister, there is a hand that has been raised. Honorable Tsoukas, I give you 30 seconds.
Okay. In light of what the Minister said, the Minister is basically saying that the Portfolio Committee's understanding of the regulation and the impact of it, or not the impact rather, but the I'm sorry, there's a misunderstanding between how we see the regulations and it seems most of the public. In social development, we've had, and at basic education, a round table. And I want to suggest, because for us at least, the wider implications of the regulations, that there be a round table with the minister. What the minister said now around the scientists, I can send the minister the article. The very scientist is not about the broader implications alone. If I take just the mask, I will say to the minister, the same scientists are saying it provides little to no protection against being infected. The question that we need now is this. Will these regulations be implemented in place after the 30 days, and whether COVID is as a notifiable medical condition, these regulations are going to be now implemented. That's what we need to know as a matter of urgency. Thank you.
Honorable Van Staden's hand was up, and Honorable Clark, you only have really 30 seconds, please, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to concur with Member Tsoukas that we have had the discussion with roundtables. I think since the starting of a pandemic in 2020, we as a committee, it feels like we've most time we are feels like we are keeping in the dark on certain matters. And I think it's important to have such roundtable discussions with each other before we have a situation again which can get out of hand. And just a note on what the minister was saying, we didn't say, I couldn't remember anyone saying he was forced to come here. I thanked him at the beginning of this meeting for coming here because we requested him to come here. I was just want to clarify that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. I concur with the previous members. I think this needs a lot more discussion. And I would like to highlight that in the current form of the proposed regulations, the DA completely objects the proposed regulations to the Health Act in its current form. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to take that last, and honorable members, do not raise your hands after this. I'm going to take Honorable Munyai, then I'm going to get a last response from the minister, and we are then going to adjourn this meeting. Honorable Munyai. Honorable Munyai. All right, we've lost Honorable Munyai. Honorable Minister, you want to respond to those very quickly, and after that, Honorable Minister,
Honorable Chair, all I'm saying that through you, Honorable Chair, all I'm trying to put forward is that we can't have endless discussions because the platform has been provided for anyone to make an input. I think Minister answered all our questions. So therefore, Chairperson, I propose that we go forward, having been clarified today by the Minister. Thank you.
Chairperson, I'm supporting Honorable Munyai, fully supporting Honorable Munyai.
Point of order, Chair. Point of order. This meeting is now. It's not the correct word, please.
Okay. Honorable members, no more hands, no more discussion. Thank you very much. We're coming towards the end. I'm now allowing Honorable Minister to respond to just one, those one, two short points. I've already made my ruling. No one else to speak. Honorable Minister.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just to assure the members that we will indeed consider the views which they've expressed. What we don't agree with is just an outright rejection without actually making an alternative. We believe that as a government, we have a responsibility to guide the public in the midst of a pandemic which is still there. The pandemic is not over until the WHO declares that this pandemic is over. So we will consider the submissions. We are busy even now, and we remain available in terms of, as we have done over the last 2 years, whether in terms of the pandemic or any other matter, if there's a request from the portfolio committee for further engagement, nevertheless, we'll carry on, do our work as mandated by the people of the Republic, and also in terms of the laws which govern how we must function. So, but we're available even beyond this for any further discussions on any other matter, not just COVID-19. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable, for coming today to brief us. Indeed, it was a wonderful briefing and robust discussion and very well answered. And I think it gives a lot of clarity to the members of the Portfolio Committee, but also not only to the members of the Portfolio Committee. We take cognizance of the fact that this has been live broadcast on our national television. So I think it has been a wonderful opportunity for people of South Africa to deal firsthand with these regulations, the process, and where the Minister and the Department think they will be taking it in the future. We also want to just recognize, and we should have done this in the beginning, the family of those whose lives were lost with the floods in KZN, and also so much property damage, and the visit of the President and Ministers to the province of KZN. We also note that the number has been put on the chat for the WhatsApp groups. I'm going to mention it here so that the public can also then note this number down for comments on the regulations on the notifiable relating to the surveillance and the control of notifiable medical conditions. It is 06-00-123-456. 06-00-123-456. Then, honorable members, we will resume normal activity on the 19th of April, where we will be receiving presentations from the entities. There are two very important dates, the 4th of May and the 10th of May. And the 4th of May, we will be adopting the committee's report. And on the 10th of May, it will be taken to the National Assembly. So we have a lot of work to do towards those two dates.
Sorry,
and
Chair.
Then finally.
Sorry, Chair, while you're on that subject, please, we need to, I don't know how to put this. We've got the Zedra, okay? And our committee does not even feature on the Zedra. Now, we plan our lives accordingly. Our lives are not just portfolio. There's lots of other parliamentary work that we do and lots of work as members of the Portfolio of Health. Our committee is not even on the deadline.
It's not even on the Z list. It makes it very, very difficult for us to plan ahead when, you know, we're expecting one day of hearings and we suddenly find out there's three full days that haven't been planned for because we don't even appear on the Z list. Can we please get that attention?
Thank you, Honorable Wilson. Ms. Majalamba, you are noting that to make certain that we do appear on the Z list. But just for you, Honorable Members, this program, the stringent process to go through for these programs to be agreed to by the programming committee, and we normally are way ahead with ours. Just to put you at ease that you're one of the committees who do very well on our program. And then finally, Honorable Members, all of you, have a wonderful Easter weekend. Stay safe, drive safely wherever you're going, and come back safely again. And to your family members, do enjoy the rest. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.
Happy Easter, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Happy Easter to all of you.